real-time views. So we're on Station Gold, she said.
It's big, Corvus replied, grinning widely. A lot bigger than the Torch ship. Got lots of labs, workshops, even an auditorium where they hold conferences and such,
Jaeger said.
The living quarters aren't as spiffy as Australia's, but they're not all that bad.
Wait until you go out to the observation deck, said Dorne, and see Jupiter close up. It's overwhelming.
Deirdre nodded. You guys will have to show me around the station.
All three of them nodded happily.
Sitting in a virtual reality chamber, her face masked by molecule-thin goggles and a speaker bud in one ear, Catherine Westfall was getting a tour of Gold from the station's director, Grant Archer. Archer had been at the arrival lounge's airlock to welcome her aboard the station.
"We'll take care of your staff, Mrs. Westfall," he had told her. "Once you're settled in, I'd like to give you a tour of the station."
Except for his silvery little beard and close-cropped hair, Grant Archer appeared deceptively youthful. Good shoulders, Westfall saw, and steady brown eyes that looked as if they could be stubborn.
"My people will see to my luggage," she had said. "Why don't we start the tour right now?"
Archer had smiled at her, a warm, personable smile.
"That will be fine."
He gestured down the passageway leading from the arrival lounge.
"This way, then."
She was surprised when he led her to a small, dimly lit chamber, empty except for a high-backed chair standing in its center. It looked to her more like an interrogation room than anything else, except that its walls were covered with gauges and dials, and there was a bulky electronics console in one corner.
"The station's pretty big,"
he said, leading her to the chair.
"We've learned that going through it in virtual reality is a lot easier than actually walking into every nook and cranny."
"Oh,"
she said as she sat in the chair. It felt cold, hard.
"I'll run the simulation myself,"
Archer said, going to the console. She had to turn around in the chair to see him leaning over the console's desk front and switching on the power. A row of green lights sprang up. Archer opened a drawer and pulled out what looked to her like a limp cloth and a tiny blob of plastic.
"If you'll slip the viewing mask over your eyes and put the speaker into one of your ears, we'll be ready to go."
Wordlessly, Catherine did as he asked. A pang of alarm surged through her. She was blind. She couldn't see a thing. But she heard Archer's calm tenor voice.
"Okay. Everything's in the green. Here we go. Welcome to Research Station Thomas Gold."
Station Gold. Colors swirled briefly before her eyes. They coalesced to show Catherine Westfall a view of the station as it orbited the giant planet Jupiter. She seemed to be hanging in space, yet she felt perfectly warm and comfortable. The solidity of the chair she was sitting upon felt reassuring. She saw that the station consisted of three wheels, one on top of another, connected by a central spine. The outer skins of the wheels were studded with viewport bubbles, airlock hatches, antennas, sensors, and other paraphernalia that Catherine could not identify. As she drifted closer to the orbiting station, she could see elevator cabs running up and down the central shaft. The entire station was spinning slowly. "Of course," she told herself, "that's how they get a feeling of normal gravity inside." Archer's calm, steady voice sounded in her ear.
"Station Gold originally was just one wheel, the one on top. We've named that one after the station's original director, Dr. Li Zhangwo. The other two wheels are too new to have been named yet."
"That's where most of his funding has been spent,"
Westfall said to herself. "On construction." Archer's voice droned on.
"The first wheel is now devoted completely to research operations. They have teams working on the four big moons of Jupiter, the Galilean satellites."
And Westfall saw a building on the ice surface of Europa, built like a fortress in that frozen wilderness. The sky was dark and empty, except for a scattering of stars. Archer's voice explained that glare from sunlight reflecting off the ice blotted out all but the brightest of stars. The scene looked bleak and cold, and somehow frightening to Catherine. She shuddered involuntarily.
"The surface structure has to be heavily insulated not only against the cold," Archer was explaining, "but also against the tremendous radiation flux from Jupiter's Van Allen belts."
At that, she saw the immense, multi-hued planet climbing above Europa's ice-covered horizon, like a huge, all-encompassing monster rising out of the black infinity. Jupiter was enormous, streaked with ribbons of color that eddied and swirled while she watched, suddenly gasping for breath.
"Of course,"
Archer's cool, unruffled voice continued,
"the real work on Europa goes on beneath the ice mantle, in the buried ocean."
Catherine watched submersibles nosing through the dark waters, their lights illuminating a nightmare world of long, stringy, swaying things, dead white, tentacle-like arms waving in the currents. Sheets of rubbery expanses floated into the light and out again, as if trying to flee to the safety of darkness.
"There's plenty of life in the oceans of Europa, Ganymede, and Callisto. Most of it is comparable to terrestrial life forms such as algae, plankton, kelp, and such. All the forms we've found so far are autotrophic, like green plants on Earth, although they don't use sunlight as their energy source. They produce their own foodstuffs using the heat energy from Moon's gravitational flexing as it orbits Jupiter."
On and on, Archer explained. Though she knew perfectly well that she was sitting safe and warm in the VR chamber, Catherine Westfall felt jittery, almost frightened at the frigid and utterly alien world she was experiencing. Even when the scene shifted to Io, with its colorful volcanic eruptions of bright molten sulfur, she felt cold and frighteningly alone. Abruptly, the scene changed again to show an ugly, irregular, pockmarked chunk of rock floating in the emptiness of space.
"Some of our researchers are studying the smaller moons of Jupiter as well,"
Archer explained.
"They've identified 73 of them so far. Most of them are asteroids or cometary bodies that have fallen into Jupiter's huge gravity well and been pulled into orbits around the planet."
The scene shifted to show Jupiter's colorful, churning cloud tops again.
"Occasionally, an asteroidal or cometary body is pulled into Jupiter itself,"
Archer narrated. Westfall saw an oblong chunk of what looked like dirty ice tumbling through space, heading smack into the clouds, a trail of vapor boiling off it as it fell.
"Less than 2 months ago, Comet McDaniel Lloyd was pulled into the planet."
The comet disappeared into the bright colored clouds. Then the region brightened briefly, with what might have been an explosion below the top of the cloud deck.
"Comet exploded with a force of thousands of megatons,"
Archer was saying, still as calm as a grandfather reading children's stories.
"We are, of course, studying the effects the explosion has had on the local ecology."
Once more she saw the three-wheeled station.
"The station's orbit is close enough to Jupiter so that we're below the most intense radiation of the Van Allen belts. Our second wheel is taken up by the commercial gas-scooping operations that extract fusion fuels such as helium-3 out of the upper layers of Jupiter's atmosphere and sell them to fusion power companies on Earth, the Moon, and elsewhere in the solar system. For more than 20 years, Jupiter has been the main energy source for the human race's fusion power systems."
Westfall saw a sleek, bullet-shaped vessel detach itself from the station's middle wheel and hurtle downward toward the colorful cloud tops of the giant planet.
"The scoop ships are remotely controlled, of course, by personnel in the station."
The view changed to show a team of men and women in sky-blue coveralls sitting at a row of consoles.
"The fusion operation consists of remote operators, maintenance and service personnel, and the usual corps of administrators and directors,"
Archer was saying, as if reading from a prepared script.
"Without these scooping operations, fusion power plants throughout the solar system would be deprived of the fuels they need to provide the human race's main source of clean, efficient energy."
The market for fusion fuels has leveled off.